Skinwalkers are dark compared to that. You've got to get the real stories from the peoples of the Navajo, Ute, and other southwestern tribes to get the really juicy material. They don't talk about them often, because the genuine and entirely rational fear the stories inspire only makes the creatures stronger. The tribes rarely talk about them with outsiders, because outsiders have no foundation of folklore to draw upon to protect themselves, and because you never know when the outsider to whom you're telling dark tales might be a skinwalker looking to indulge a sense of macabre irony. But I've been in the business a while, and I know people who know the stories. They'd confided a handful to me in broad daylight, looking nervously around them as they spoke, as if afraid that dredging up the dark memories might catch a skinwalker's attention. Because sometimes it did. That's how bad skinwalkers are. Even amongst the people who know the danger they represent, who know better than anyone else in the world how to defend against them, no one wants to talk about skinwalkers. But in a way, it worked in my favor. Walking down a dark alley in the middle of a Chicago night and stepping over the spot on the concrete where I'd almost been ripped to pieces just wasn't spooky enough to encompass the presence of a skinwalker. If things got majorly tales from the dark side creepy and shivery, I'd know I was in real trouble. As it was, the night was simply a small figure in a lightweight Cubs jacket stepped around the corner at the end of the alley. The newly restored streetlight shone on blonde hair, and Sergeant Karen Murphy said, "Evening, Dresden." Complicated. "Murph," I responded woodenly. Murphy was a sergeant with Chicago PD's Special Investigations Department. When something supernaturally bad happened and the cops got involved, Murphy often contacted me to get my take on things. The city didn't want to hear about imaginary things like skinwalkers or vampires. They just wanted the problem to go away. But Murphy and the rest of SI were the people who had to make it happen. "I tip a guy down at Impound to keep an eye out for certain vehicles," Murphy said. "Pay him in bottles of McAnally's ale. He calls me and tells me your car got brought in." "Uh-huh," I said. Murphy fell into pace beside me as I turned out onto the sidewalk. She was 5 feet nothing, with blonde hair that fell a little past her shoulders, and blue eyes. She was more cute than pretty, and looked like someone's favorite aunt, which seemed likely. She had a fairly large Irish Catholic family. "Then I hear about a power outage," she said, "and a huge disturbance at the same apartments where your werewolf friends live. I hear about a girl who might not make it and a boy who didn't." "Yeah," I said. It might have come out a little bleak.
"Who was it?" Murphy asked.
"Kirby," I said.
"Jesus," Murphy said. "What happened?"
"Something fast and mean was following me. The werewolves jumped it. Things went bad." Murphy nodded and stopped, and I dimly realized that we were standing next to her Saturn, an updated version of the one that had been blown up, blithely parked in front of a hydrant. She went around to the trunk and popped it open. "I took a look at that pile of parts you call a car." She drew out the medical toolbox and cooler from her trunk and held them up. "These were on the passenger seat. I thought they might have been there for a reason."
Hell's bells. In the confusion of the attack and its aftermath, I'd all but forgotten the whole reason I'd gone out in the first place.
I took the medical kit from her as she offered it.
"Yeah, stars and stones, yeah, Murph. Thank you."
"You need a ride?" she asked me. I'd been planning on flagging down a cab eventually, but it would be better not to spend the money if I didn't need to. Wizarding might be sexy, but it didn't pay nearly as well as lucrative careers like law enforcement.
"Sure," I said.
"What a coincidence. I need some questions answered." She unlocked the door with an actual key, not the little what's-it that does it for you automatically with the press of a button, and held it open for me with a gallant little gesture, like I'd done for her about a million times. She probably thought she was mocking me with that impersonation. She was probably right. This mess was getting stickier by the minute, and I didn't want to drag Murphy into it. I mean, Jesus. The werewolves had been capable defenders of their territory for a long while, and I'd gotten half of them taken out in the first couple hours of the case. Murphy wouldn't fare any better in the waters through which I was currently swimming. On the other hand, I trusted Murph. I trusted her judgment, her ability to see where her limits lay. She'd seen cops carved to pieces when they tried to box out of their weight division, and knew better than to attempt it. And if she started throwing obstacles in my way,
and she could, a lot of them, that I couldn't do diddly about, then my life would get a whole lot harder. Even though she wasn't running CPD's Special Investigations Department anymore, she still had clout there, and a word from her to Lieutenant Stallings could hobble me, maybe lethally. So I guess you could say that Murphy was threatening to bust me if I didn't talk to her, and you'd be right. And you could say that Murphy was offering to put her life on the line to help me, and you'd be right. And you could say that Murphy had done me a favor with a medical kit in order to obligate me to her when she told me that she wanted to be dealt in, and you'd be right. You could also say that I was standing around dithering when time was critical, and you'd be right about that, too. At the end of the day, Murphy is good people. I got in the car.